it's time to welcome my regular guest, Chris Carey, who volunteers his time each week to select and research our classic picks and then is kind enough to come in and share his findings with me and all of you. And we discuss and review that record together this week. Marianne Faithfull's Broken English. What a great choice. You're picking a lot of ones that make me happy these days.
Oh, well, there's so many albums that make me happy. So it's not hard, I guess, that there's going to be quite a few that we overlap on.
Yeah.
Yeah, Marianne Faithfull's Broken English came out in November 1979, so 40 years ago. This was Marianne Faithfull's seventh studio album. She's, of course, an English singer-songwriter. She was born in London. She began her career in 1969 performing folk music in and around London, mostly in coffee houses, and got kind of a local attention and was on the scene and was high profile enough that she got invited to a Rolling Stones record launch party for 12 by 5, I believe, in 64, and was discovered by the manager of the Stones at the time, Andrew Oldham, who got her a record deal. And pretty soon she hit it off famously with all the Stones, and she actually worked with Mick Jagger and Keith Richards on her first hit, As Tears Go By. They composed it and co-wrote that, and later on they actually re-recorded that song on December's Children. Before long, she was hanging out with Brian Jones and Mick Jagger and Keith Richards, and began a very public relationship with Mick Jagger. You know, so she had a lot of influence on the Stones early on, and as a matter of fact, she gave the she has said to either influence or co-write a few songs that she's never gotten official credit on. I know she gave a book to Mick Jagger that he read and in turn wrote Sympathy for the Devil. She's also supposedly at least gave some ideas or helped write You Can't Always Get What You Want and Wild Horses. She did get official credit on Sister Morphine, which is actually one of my favorite Rolling Stones songs. That happened later on when there was a long court battle that she took the Stones to court over to get some royalties, basically, because at the time, this is in the 70s, she wasn't doing so well. Because, of course, hanging out with the Stones, there's going to be some bad habits
choices
that you might be exposed to. And
trips to the bad idea factory.
Yes, and so hanging out with these guys, by 68, she was pretty heavily into cocaine and heroin. In 1970, she broke up with Mick Jagger, and not long after that, her son from her first marriage was taken away from her. She attempted suicide and went down the rabbit hole as far as addiction, even living as long as 2 years on the streets in Soho in London. This riches to rags story and then back to riches thing, where she was, you know, she really suffered with this a lot for several years. And during this time, she got a really chronic case of laryngitis, and that combined with her drug use really changed her voice. And for somebody who had such a beautiful voice before, a lot of times this would be a career-wrecking thing that happened. But it changed her voice, but in a wonderful way. And maybe not the process was so wonderful, but, you know, her voice got a lot lower and cracked a lot.
And it opened up another dimension of expression, really.
Yeah, it really did. And it is kind of amazing to me when somebody's voice isn't technically great, but somehow still wonderful. I mean, I think of Tom Petty when I think of that too.
Yeah.
And so her voice changed a lot, but in many ways for the better. So that happened, you know, in the mid 70s, and by 75 she started pulling herself back up. She got off the street. She came out with a release in 76 called Dreaming My Dreams, and it got a little bit of attention, but not very much. But she shortly after that she recorded a demo of Broken English. And Island Records was pretty impressed by it, so they signed her. And she went into the studio in May of 1979 with producer Mark Miller Mundy, which he hadn't worked with a lot of people before her, and he hasn't worked with a lot of other people. He did produce several of her albums, though. He worked really well with her. He recorded this whole album, and then after it was over, he said, you know, this needs to be a little bit more modern sounding. We need to do something to change this. It doesn't sound like as modern as I'd like it to sound. So he asked Steve Winwood to come in, and they re-recorded the album with Steve Winwood doing all the keyboards on it, and it changed it. And it's crazy because it's when this came out in 1979, I mean, punk was just getting going. And this is like one of the few, you know, one of the, not the first post-punk record. I still think the first post-punk record any of all time was probably Modern Lover's self-titled debut. But this was a very early post-punk record, and it kind of captured a lot of the angst and anger that you would hear in a punk album. And I mean, she did know a lot of different people in punk bands at the time. And I think she was dating somebody, I can't remember now which punk band she was dating at the time, but so she had that influence, but then she changed it and it made it kind of dark, you know, with Steve Winwood and Mundy's kind of vision. It kind of created this dark cinematic thing that you hadn't heard a lot in the 1970s, at least as far as the singer-songwriter thing was concerned. And I actually was listening to this a lot. I'm convinced that we talked about Daniel Lanois and Brian Eno working on Unforgettable Fire and Joshua Tree and that kind of cinematic kind of ethereal vibe they get in this. And I'm convinced that they had both listened to this record a lot because it's got kind of the same vibe to me.
I think that is a valid theory.
I mean, you know, and it only came out a few years before they were working with U2. And I'm sure that Brian Eno and Daniel Lanois, being who they were listening to this album along with a lot of other stuff going on in the late 70s. Anyway, commercially, this was a significant commercial success. It became her most successful record up to that point. And it was the first time that she was back on the charts since the late 60s in the U.S. and in the U.K. And ended up selling over 1 million copies. She was charting in several different countries. And it was also immediately a widespread critical acclaim from both sides of the pond. Everybody loved it. And, you know, it was regarded as a major comeback. And everybody was really happy to see her back in the saddle. She ended up getting nominated for a Grammy for Best Female Performance. Still to this day, most people consider this kind of Marianne Faithfull's definitive recording, and even she considers it her masterpiece. She looks back at it. I mean, and she's got well over 20 albums, and she still thinks that this is probably her best recording.
Well, and I think this is also one of those albums that seems to get continuously rediscovered and occasionally getting bumps up. I mean, when it showed up on the Thelma & Louise soundtrack as a pretty key part of that film in some pretty pivotal scenes, I think that introduced her then again to a whole new audience, and that was, I think, 1993, 94.
Yeah. Now a long time ago.
Yeah. So, but you know, a good 15 years after the record originally came out. So it just seems to have a record that has that sort of regenerative, continuously finding new life, new audience kind of thing.
And and she's inspired a lot of people. And, you know, a lot of times we talk about this on this segment, that there's some artists that are huge in a monumental way by affecting every aspect of society, selling tons of records. And then there are these albums that are big, but more in a subtle way, and that this is an album that a lot of artists will cite as being an influence on them. And because of that, she's, you know, since 1979, she's worked with all sorts of musicians like Beck and PJ Harvey and Nick Cave and Lou Reed, Brian Eno, Roger Waters, I mean, Steve Earle, there's
the Cat list Power.
Goes, yeah, Cat Power. I mean, there's tons of artists that revere her, and she does have a way of delivering something with her voice that I don't think a lot of other people could.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. I'm talking with Chris Carey about our classic pick of the week. It is Marianne Faithfull's Broken English, came out around this time back in 1979, making it 40 years old. It is our classic pick of the week.